Hello and welcome to Object Matters, the podcast of the Chow Chak Wing Museum at the University of Sydney. My name is Craig Barker and I'm the Head of Public Engagement for the Museum and the host of the podcast series. Object Matters explores the relationship between our guest and a museum collection item. And for this particular episode, I'm very, very excited to be joined by Dr. Andrew Simpson from Macquarie University. Andrew is the president of UMAC, which we'll be talking about today, an honorary associate of the Chow Chak Wing Museum, and the author of the recent book, The Museums and Collections of Higher Education. Welcome, Andrew. Thank you very much for joining us on Object Matters.
Thank you very much for the invite, Craig.
Now, very excited to talk to you about a whole range of different things, and particularly around what UMAC is. But could I begin by asking you to tell our listeners a bit about your background and about your research interests?
Rightio. Yeah, my background, actually, I started off life as a science graduate. And after a little bit of a short career out working for various corporations, I managed to get a job in a small university science museum. And I found this was really quite life-changing and quite exciting. And it sort of made me realise that it's really interesting the way museums work to get people interested in ideas, yeah, to tell stories. And I became interested not so much in the science anymore, but more interested in the museum as an institution,
right,
and the
yes,
work kinds of things it could do.
Yeah, the way it could communicate science.
Yeah. I had a kind of an epiphany at one stage. I was actually asked to make an exhibition on the history of the world. Yeah, you know, the physical history of the world, the geological history of the world.
No challenge there.
In 12 specimens.
Oh, wow. Yes.
And I thought, well, this is really quite an interesting challenge. Of course, this is even before 100
objects
from British Museum. But anyway, that really made me think about, you know, how you can tell stories with objects and things like that.
Mm. And then from that, obviously, your career has continued that involvement both in terms of museums, but also in terms of education around museums and museum practices. Talk a bit more about sort of how you've evolved your academic career.
Okay, after sort of professional work in university museums, I was fortunate enough to be in a situation where I could propose a degree program with some other people. So we put forward a degree program that was kind of a mixture of science and arts, but was built around the idea that there's a basic set of knowledge that somebody should have if they wanted to work in a museum, regardless of whether it was science or art or humanities or whatever. And I did that for just over 10 years as an undergraduate program and a postgraduate program. Mm. And a lot of the graduates from there are doing interesting things now in the museum world.
It's interesting. You talk about establishing a program and courses for students in terms of museum studies, because, I mean, overall, professional museum studies degrees are still a relatively new course. I mean, they've been around for a few decades now, but still a relatively new idea. Why are undergraduate and postgraduate museum studies courses important for the sector?
Okay, I think they're really important to the sector because they can really sort of generate an interest in how you tell stories about communities and about what happens to communities. And museums are kind of like transforming nowadays, so they're letting more voices come inside the museum and tell their own stories. So they're kind of like a theatre, if you like, for contesting different or exploring different ideas and themes like that. And I think that it's good for people to be trained up in that theory of what a museum as an organisation can do if they want to go on and work in museums. It's interesting because if you say, just look at the directors of the large museums, they're usually trying to hire people for specific skills, some sort of specialised role within the museum.
Yeah.
But for smaller museums, and even for the larger museums, it's really good if you know, I think, that you're hiring someone who understands what a museum is, understands what it can do, and has some sort of sense of the history and theory behind museums as organisations.
Yeah. It makes sense too, because, I mean, historically museums are often curated or managed by staff members who had an academic expertise in a particular area or a set of skills in another area, but there was almost a dilettante approach to the museum, as opposed to a professional one. Do you think that actually that idea of providing the training for students has had a profound effect upon the way that museums operate?
I think yes. I think it's sort of slowly changing, and it's a really interesting question, because if you look at a lot of sort of non-Anglophone type countries, this is sort of already happening, and it's kind of on the back of a really strong interest in their own cultural heritage, and how you can use material collections to advocate for support of their cultural heritage. But I think it's slowly coming in the Western world now, and people are realising that many Western societies are actually an amalgam of all sorts of different influences, and also no object just has a single story. There are always multiple stories and multiple ways of telling stories around a certain object. So I think it's slowly becoming more so that, you know, professional training and professional understanding of museums is going to become more sort of sought after by the sector, I think. But the sector is slow to adapt, as indeed any sector is.
So, Andrew, could you talk a little bit about your association with the Chow Chak Wing Museum?
Yes. I kind of stopped full-time work a few years back, and luckily I was very interested in the development of the University of Sydney in terms of bringing the collections and the smaller museums together into one big sort of centralised museum. And very interested that this was sort of quite a unique approach, particularly amongst Australian universities. And I've written a little bit about this in some of the journal articles I've written. And so I was fascinated by what was going on here, and I got to know some of the people at the museum as a way of sort of doing research, and also through other professional organisations. And I asked whether it would be possible to sort of actually do some research based at the new museum development. And I was given sort of an research affiliates position, and that's what I've published the recent book under, and recent articles as well.
Well, I'd like to ask you a few questions about the book, and of course the book actually has the Chow Chak Wing Museum on the cover, which
it
is
does.
Lovely. So
wonderful picture by Anthony Fretwell, who's done some beautiful photography of the new sort of architectural phenomena that is the Chow Chak Wing Museum.
Yes, it is a beautiful cover. The book, it's only been out a couple of months now, Museums and Collections of Higher Education. I think you once described it to me as your COVID lockdown project as well. But what was the aim of the book? What were you aiming to achieve?
Okay. With a lot of the literature and a lot of the writing about museums, there's very little that's actually been written about the institutional setting of the university as a place where you have either collections or museums. A lot of the writing about museums tends to be discipline-specific, so it's, say, about art museums or natural history museums or whatever. But the kind of institutional setting is something that's sort of different for academic museums, and it cuts across all the traditional disciplines of knowledge. So I thought it was worthwhile having a look at the museum as a phenomena in this kind of a setting, and just see, okay, then, well, what does it actually bring to the higher education enterprise? And so that was the basis for what I started researching. Yeah. And in the time that I sort of looked at an awful lot of writings about university museums, I found out that museums in universities actually bring an awful lot to support the general business of higher education.
Yes, and it's good to have that documented. Could you talk, I know you cover this in the book as well, but could you talk a little bit more about sort of the global history of university museums?
Okay.
I think some of our listeners may be aware of, you know, the Ashmolean, but it's often for a very Eurocentric perspective.
Yeah.
And one of the things your book highlights is that it's a global tradition of universities having collections that are being used for teaching, for research, and then obviously also for communication with the outside community. So, where do we sit in the 21st century in terms of the bigger history of university museums?
Okay, it's a very, very good question. And actually, it's something I discovered when I was doing research for the book, that the kind of museum and the university as we know them today kind of emerged during the Renaissance in the 17th century. And it's that European model that has sort of become the global model now. But if you look at how other societies have dealt with the generation of knowledge and how you transmit that to new generations. It's a phenomenon it's a cultural phenomenon that's across the world and goes way back into antiquity.
Yes.
And one of the most interesting phenomena I found in terms of doing the research was the ancient library of Alexandria. Yep. If you read about this and see how they operated, it's more or less like a proto-university.
Yeah.
It was all about the contestation of ideas. It attracted scholars from all around the known world. They had material collections there, yes, as well as a grand library. So it was a kind of a melting pot where you had text, objects, and interesting people interested in ideas. Yeah, and so it's a bit like the original university, if you like. But I think the important thing here is that once you've got objects and text, then you're really in the business of generating new ideas. If you're sort of an institution that's just got either one or the other, either text or an object, you're really more about actually just transmitting ideas.
Yeah,
so if say, you're a small local history museum or something like that that has got a set of objects, then you're just telling stories, essentially. But if you've got objects and text and interesting people with interesting ideas, you're actually making new knowledge. And that, I think, is the great advantage for academic museums and what they can do in contemporary times.
Mm. And particularly approaches to interdisciplinary research and interdisciplinary teaching as well.
Yeah, that kind of link to interdisciplinarity is really something that can be mobilised by objects, by collections. And it's something that's a great feature of the Chow Chak Wing Museum. And I think it really comes through in the exhibitions like Object Art Specimen and things like that. Yeah. It's really sort of enabling those linkages between different fields of knowledge.
Yeah. University museums, of course, historically, and particularly those based on the Western model, such as the Chow Chak Wing Museum, are not immune to the broader discussions across the GLAM sector, the galleries, libraries, archives and museum sector. Issues around ethics, issues around repatriation, issues around legacy collections, yep, and often problematic and colonial collections, often associated around techniques and philosophies of teaching that are no longer considered appropriate.
Yep.
How do we, as a sector in the 21st century, engage with some of those conversations and challenges?
I think this really is the sort of big issue for all museums at the moment, and even for all universities. And when you sort of think about it, the university, in terms of the European model, and the museum, also in terms of the European model, have been kind of like the centres of power, and the kind of knowledge that they've sort of transmitted has been the one sort of Eurocentric view of the world. But I think we're at a stage where, you know, as we were saying before, we need to hear multiple voices. We need multiple knowledge systems represented in our universities and in our museums. And so I think the university museum is a perfect space to be experimenting in this way.
Yes.
How can we convey an understanding of Indigenous knowledge systems and Western scientific knowledge in a way where they kind of possibly mutually support each other? Yeah. How can we tell those kind of stories through our museums? I think this is a big challenge, especially for university museums, but even mainstream museums are also looking at how we do this. It's a matter of acknowledging the fact that past practices were all based on a very singular worldview.
Yes.
And a singular worldview is simply not going to cut it in contemporary times.
No. Well, I mean, you talk about that multiplicity of approaches, but it's one of the key features you discuss in the book about how a university museum should be part of the social contracts between a university and the community that the university is serving. Yep. To your mind, how can a museum do this? What's its purpose? Okay. Are they there to teach students, or are they there to be an open museum, like a state-based museum?
I think they're there to do both, an academic museum. And the important thing that an academic museum can do is be kind of like a portal or a gateway between the world of academic ideas and the civil world of ideas. And so it's a way in which the university can do positive things for society by doing these kind of explorations through their university museums. Mm. It's a way in which, in terms of the social contract of a university, I mean, that's the basically the idea that universities are set up to sort of do good things for humanity and society and the world, in fact, rather than just be machines that churn out graduates for corporate capitalism or something like that. Yeah. So it's a matter, so that's what is meant to be entailed in the social contract. And because they're kind of boundary-breaching organisations between the academy and broader society, they can be a great vehicle for communicating what goes on in the academy and vice versa.
Yeah. And for teaching students how to communicate their knowledge
absolutely.
And their ideas as well.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think to a degree you've just answered my next question, but I'll go ahead anyway. In your mind, what values do museums bring to higher education?
Okay, I think they bring lots of values to higher education because they are a peak to curiosity. They can provoke curiosity amongst people. I mean, museum theorists have known that this is one of the aspects of material collections to be able to do this. The kinds of values they bring to higher education is they become vehicles for broader social engagement. They can support teaching by cutting across different academic disciplines, as we see happening in the Chow Chak Wing Museum. And also, objects and collections of objects can be the material manifestation of research programs and research ideas as well. Mm-hmm. So there's a place for museums and collections in the kind of what's called the tripartite mission of universities, which is teaching, research and broader community engagement.
You devote a chapter in the book, and to my mind one of the most fascinating of the chapters, all around the concept of lessons to be learnt from university museums and collections. What do you consider to be the biggest lesson?
Yeah, that's a really good and interesting question. And I remember when I was writing that chapter towards the end of COVID lockdown, I was trying to sort of pull threads together from the previous chapters. And what I realised is that many civic museums that are reliant on sort of state government funding or philanthropy have kind of lost their research function.
Yeah.
They're kind of telling stories, essentially. And some of them do that very successfully, and I don't want to sort of besmirch the quality of what they do. But university museums in particular are really at that kind of coalface of generating new ideas. So I think civic museums are more likely, now of course some civic museums do maintain research, of course but they're more likely to just tell stories. And if you're just telling stories, you're not going to sort of cause any sort of disruptions in the prevailing understanding of the world.
Yeah.
But if you're researching and questioning and working with objects, then you know you are looking for ways to actually disrupt current sort of levels of understanding or current knowledge frameworks or something like that.
Yeah.
And I think that's the great advantage that university museums have, is they've got that, because of their position, they've got that potential to really be able to change people's mind, change how people look at knowledge. They've got the potential to broker a new relationship to knowledge for society.
You're listening to Object Matters. My guest this episode is Dr. Andrew Simpson. Now, Andrew, I'm going to ask you to put on one of your other hats, one of your many other hats, UMAC. You are the current president of UMAC. What is UMAC? What does it stand for? Why was it founded? And what is the organisational aims?
Okay. UMAC is one of the international committees of a global organisation called ICOM. ICOM is the International Council of Museums, which is a large group based in Paris but associated with UNESCO. And it's a global group that's made up of about 40,000 to 50,000 museum professionals.
Yeah.
It has a number of different international committees, and we are one that was formed around about the turn of the last century. I think we formed in 2001, actually, was the first meeting. And the kind of defining aspect of us as an international committee is that institutional setting of being in higher education.
Yeah.
Other international committees of ICOM are things like, you know, art museums, natural history museums, or museum training. There's
archaeology museums.
Archaeology museums, indeed.
Yeah, and so on and so on.
Archaeology museums, I think, were one of the first international committees. So, yeah, we're an international group. We've been going for about 22 years, and very delighted to be bringing our annual conference to Australia.
Yeah, well, I want to ask about UMAC 2023 in a moment, but of course, as well as the conference, there's a journal, you've got a website. So, I mean, you know, in terms of member engagement and then hopefully broader engagement, sort of what are some of the aims of UMAC?
Okay, some of the aims of UMAC, and the reason why it was originally set up was round about the turn of the last century, the end of the last century, there was a period where a lot of higher education, particularly in the Western world, went through fairly dramatic changes. And there was a lot of financial pressure on universities to really look at the value of what they did and how they did it. And what happened is there was a general feeling that many universities were actually abandoning collections, closing down museums, and even sort of throwing out stuff that had been around for a long time.
There was a lot of petitions at one stage, I remember signing.
And there was kind of a feeling amongst people who worked in university museums that this is kind of a foolish and possible short-term response to the financial pressures. And perhaps we need a group that can advocate internationally for the value that museum work brings to higher education.
Now, as you mentioned, the annual conference, and the Chow Chak Wing Museum is just about to host the annual conference, UMAC 2023. Yep. It'll be the first face-to-face conference for a number of years as well because of the pandemic. What's the aim and ambition of UMAC 2023?
Okay. The aim and ambition of UMAC 2023 is, like all our other conferences, is to come together and share best practice and also be inspired by some of the good work that is being done by people all around the world. We've got about, I think it's about 30 different nations will be coming to UMAC 2023.
Yes, every continent apart from Antarctica, I believe.
Yes, we've never managed to get an Antarctic representative at one of our...
No university museums on...
I don't know whether there's a university in Antarctica. That's a good question. I'll have to have a look into that, Craig. So the idea is to actually look at current practice, and as we mentioned earlier on in the discussion, there's a big issue around legacy collections that are in universities, and there's a big issue around, and lots of universities now are looking at repatriating, looking at connecting back to source communities for a lot of their collections, and actually bringing them into the museum space as well, and into the higher education space. And so there'll be the conference itself will be a lot of sort of discussing these sort of recent developments. A lot of people who work in the field kind of think that museums have to go through this process where they're changing from being sort of points of scientific and cultural authority to actually being part of a network of scientific and cultural agencies.
Yes, yeah.
And this is the big change that's kind of affecting all museums, actually.
Yeah. For UMAC 2023, the broader theme of the conference is the idea of truth-telling within university museums and really the broader idea of truth-telling as brought up through a lot of First Nations advocacy, and particularly in the year of the Voice referenda here in Australia. How can we, and many of the papers and all of our keynotes are being presented by very, very active members of First Nations communities who have worked within the university museum sectors in different ways. How can we start truth-telling with university museum collections? What are some of the basic steps that we can do? You've alluded to some of the progress.
Yeah,
but
I think some of the basic steps we can do, well, there's a first very basic step that all universities should be doing, and that's doing an audit of what they've got in their collections. They might be surprised that there is a collection of stuff that was put together for, say, a research project back in the 1960s. Now, the ethics behind the way research was done in the 1960s is likely not to be the same as contemporary research ethics. So, really, the first step is to do an audit.
Yeah.
The next step,
and that difference between a more formalised university museum and a departmental collection.
Yes.
You know, that various universities, because of various historical factors and, you know, the types of researchers that have been employed. So, yeah, that real dichotomy between those institutions that historically have taken it as a museum and those that have kind of got stuff in a room.
Look, it's a really important distinction, and that's why when UMAC was first established, we had the name collections in the international committee's name. Mm. Because you're right, there's so much stuff that universities have. It's amazing. If you just go wandering around some of the old storerooms of universities, you're just incredible some of the stuff you can find. And we really need to understand why that stuff is there and see, okay, how can we put it to work? What's the best thing that could happen with this? And if, say, it's Indigenous material, it's a matter of connecting back to the original communities and saying, well, okay, we collected this stuff for these reasons, but we now want to know what should happen to this material. Should any of it return to you, or should you, can you tell us what this stuff means and represents? How can it be used in a creative and positive way in a museum? Or can it be used in a creative and positive way in museum programs? It's all that kind of an approach. And it's basically a reflection of the fact that museums aren't actually about stuff. They're about people to whom the stuff means something important. And it's great to see. Well, I know that Sydney University has done some repatriation work already. And it's. I think other universities are doing the same. I know that there's a big project afoot at ANU where they're looking at a whole range of different research material that was collected from the 1950s onwards and trying to figure out, okay, what's the right sort of outcome for this material.
I guess one of the exciting things about this conference too, being a global audience participating, to actually bring delegates to Sydney to hear examples of where Australian, New Zealand and South Pacific communities have already embarked on this conversation, so that they may be able to bring best practices to other parts of the world from that global south perspective.
I think that's very true. And as you know from looking at the program, there are other interesting programs in other parts of the world where people are there's one term I think that turned up in one of the descriptions of one of the presentations called two-way museology, which is a South American term, and that is kind of sharing collections with Indigenous South American communities as a way of both the university and the museum learning from the Indigenous community as much as the Indigenous community learning from the university. And those kind of partnerships, I think we're going to see more of them, and they're going to be more important in terms of appropriate and positive use of these collections. Mm.
After a number of years of digital conferences, what are you most looking forward to about UMAC 2023?
I've been to quite a few UMAC conferences, and they're always interesting. You always meet some fairly entertaining people there. So it's probably the people and the ideas are the two things that are going to really sort of pique my interest. What you probably know from as a conference goer yourself, quite often it's not so much the presentations, but the informal discussions.
Absolutely, yeah.
There's some remarkable people coming. There's some people who, I believe are doing some incredible things in their own sort of teaching practice in terms of, looking at repatriation and looking at all those contemporary issues, restitution and truth-telling, a way of sort of reimagining our history as a more sort of accurate portrayal of what has happened in the past sort of communicating that. Yeah. And it's a really terrific-looking program. I think we'll knock the socks off all the previous UMAC conferences.
I must say, I'm very excited to hear some of the presentations about the more non-traditional museum using faculties and seeing how they're coming up with new and innovative ways of using collections. I'm very much looking forward to some of those related papers as well as the broader themes. How can listeners get involved with UMAC?
Okay, UMAC is a professional association, so you can get involved if you are associated with a museum or a collection or any university by becoming a member of ICOM first, and then you choose UMAC as your international committee. That's the way it happens. But apart from that, even if you're not a university museum professional or a museum professional, we publish the journal. We also have a big online database that lists all of the university museums that we know of. Yep. We think it's only a small percentage.
Because it's growing all the time, that list, isn't it?
It is expanding all the time. So there's the online database. We also have a mailing list that anyone can join regardless of whether they're a member of ICOM or not, that will tell you about our recent sort of publication efforts, meetings, discussions, forums, and things like that. So we'd like to see more university leaders joining in with UMAC, because I think there's still a job to be done with educating some university leadership on the incredible value that museums and collections bring to higher
education. Right. In some cases, university museums are better at communicating with the general public than we are with communicating with the people who pay our wages. Now, object matters. The whole aim of the podcast is to talk about one or two objects within the collection. Is there anything that's tickled your fancy in the Chow Chak Wing Museum based on your wide experience?
Okay. Look, there's a few things, basically, that I've really enjoyed and really excited to be able to show international visitors all these in the future when the conference is on. I really liked the art object specimen exhibition because I think that really enlivens the multidisciplinarity of the museum, something that couldn't really be done when you had separate museums in different parts of the campus. But to home in on one specimen, there's a lovely little specimen of a mineral called pyromorphite, which is on show up in the Chow Chak Wing Museum on level 3, I think.
Yeah.
And it was collected from Broken Hill in the 1890s, I think. And this is pretty remarkable because Broken Hill turned out to be a massive site for mining lead, zinc and silver. You wouldn't find a quality specimen like that as you would. You couldn't find a quality specimen like that today, but you could find them obviously in the early days. And it kind of reminds me that there used to be lots of Australian universities that had geology teaching programs.
Yes.
Back in the 1980s,
yes,
every university had a geology program. Because we were reliant on digging up
mining being such a
mining
part of the Australian economy,
digging up things and flogging it off to make money. But now we're sort of not so reliant on that part of the sector, and a lot of the geology departments around Australia have closed down, and a lot of the collections have disappeared. Some of them might have gone into other museums or who knows? But it's great to see that you've still got some of the early stuff that would be impossible to recollect.
Yes.
Now, that's the thing that really struck me about that particular specimen is, you know, if that was lost, you could not replace it without spending a lot of money.
Yeah.
Yes. Making a private collector rich, probably.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah, that's a lovely
specimen. And re-engaging
specimen
with a lot of those ethical conversations as well.
Exactly, so, yes. Exactly, yeah.
I believe this is one of the pieces that you've written about for the student program of UMAC 2023 as well.
Yeah, it's fantastic to see that there's such a strong student program. I think it's a first for a UMAC meeting to engage the students, and it's been wonderful to be able to do it because you do have your museum studies, a museum and heritage studies program here at Sydney Uni. And the students have selected 16 objects and they're asking people to write just 200 or 300 words on them from their own perspective. So it's a way of actually exploring that notion that there's no one single story for any object. And I think they'll get people from across the uni to do similar things. They're really looking forward to seeing what they come up with. Mm. And the students, of course, are doing a fantastic panel session on memory and truth-telling, which we're also looking forward to.
Yeah. I very much see the student involvement as one of the legacies of this conference, that hopefully going forward it becomes a mandatory component of all future UMACs, that there's student involvement.
Absolutely. I think it should be compulsory, and I hope the Technical University of Dresden is listening to this now and they can start planning for it for next year.
So what do you see, just to bring it back out from the Chow Chak Wing Museum now to a broader discussion, what do you see as some of the challenges for university museum collections in the 21st century?
Okay, the challenge for university museum collections now is kind of the challenge that any museum has, and that's one of relevance and purpose. And that is all about aligning with the relevance and purpose of the university, essentially. And that can be a challenge because teaching modalities change, research interests change. It depends on what kind of a difference the host institution wants to make in the world, really. And that's always a big challenge because it does change.
Yeah.
And different leadership groups can have different priorities.
But if ultimately sort of the museum becomes embedded within the identity of the host university in the way that a faculty does, then it becomes part of that outreach, doesn't it?
It's not absolutely.
Oh, and by the way, we've got a museum.
Yeah, absolutely. It's actually part of the institution, not just an adjunct, because it's there to sort of, you know, explain the reason for being of the institution through what it does with objects and collections and exhibitions.
The next time visitors are in the Chow Chak Wing Museum, or depending upon where in the world you are, you jump on the UMAC website and have a look at your local
plenty of
university museums.
There
yeah,
on the
lots
UMAC
and lots
database.
And lots on the list. But what would you like them to think about universities and museums and collections as they walk around an institution like the Chow Chak Wing Museum? What's different about that from somewhere like a state-based institution or a private museum?
Okay, I think what's different about that is that kind of connection to the intellectual mission of the university. As that's really, you know, that's the parent organisation, that's really what it's all about. And it's worthwhile to think when you do see a really good museum, and people do, there are some other good university museums in the world apart from the Chow Chak Wing Museum.
Well, we've learned a lot from visiting other museums
absolutely,
as part of the whole
absolutely.
Process of dividing
and,
the space.
And it's good for people to think that universities as organisations are doing good things for society. They're actually making a contribution towards, against, you know, fighting against things like social inequality. They're contributing to the world's, you know, sustainable development goals.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're contributing to this idea that there are multiple knowledge systems in the world and we should celebrate and enjoy that and understand that. Yeah, that basically universities are a force for good as part of human society. That's what I'd hope they'd think. Some people would, of course, argue that universities aren't a force for good. And, you know, that's the one particular critique of university that comes from you know, the neoliberal tradition of university. If it's all just about the money, why would they be interested in things like museums and communicating with the public?
But a museum becomes a way of celebrating that cultural heritage.
Exactly.
Too, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Andrew, thank you. That's been a fascinating chat. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Craig, and thank you for all the curly and interesting questions. Much appreciated, and looking forward to the conference.
Excellent. Object Matters is recorded on the unceded grounds of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. The Chow Chak Wing Museum and the University of Sydney pays our respect to the traditional custodians of these lands.
Subscribe to Object Matters on your favourite podcast app and connect with the Chow Chak Wing Museum on Instagram, Twitter and Facebook. You can also subscribe to our monthly e-newsletter, News Extra, via our website, sydney.edu.au/museum.